You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Kristen Luck.
I think brand is huge in terms of attracting buyers. People are super enthusiastic because there's a good brand and a good story there, you know, and even if the company isn't the biggest firm, you know, I think having a good brand is really, really powerful.
Kristen serves as an advisor and growth strategist to a number of cutting-edge marketing and analytics technology and services firms through her consultancy, Scalehouse. She is the founder of two marketing analytics companies that she led to successful exits. Kristen co-founded OTX, an online research business that was named the fastest-growing research firm in the world in 2002 and 2003, and was subsequently acquired by Zelnick Media and Pilot Group, and again by Ipsos in 2007. She then founded Forefront Consulting Group, a research technology firm that was acquired by Decipher. Decipher was acquired by Focus Vision in 2014 after 7 consecutive years of double and triple digit growth. Kristen is a licensed investment banker with Oberon Securities and a founder focused on helping fellow founders and executive teams scale and monetize their businesses. Her deal expertise on both sides of transactions comes from participating in both acquisitions and exits from $30 million to $175 million. She is also passionate about supporting founders in international markets execute their entry into the U.S. Kristen, welcome to On Brand.
Great. Thanks for having me.
I am thrilled to have you. And one thing that folks might be sitting out there and thinking, that you are a very different type of guest for this podcast. Because a lot of times, you know, I think part of why marketing is great is because it is kind of exists on both sides of the brain. You've got your right brain marketers and you've got left brain marketers. And I think sometimes we cling to that disconnect a little too much. And what I'm really fascinated with is learning more. Your bio, your experience in growth speaks for itself. But I'm sure that brand is at least somewhat related along all of the multiple sides of the deals that you've been a part of.
For sure. Brand is huge. No doubt about it. Yeah. I mean, I think when a lot of people think about brand and marketing, they think about it strictly from a creative standpoint. And I probably have a more data-driven approach to brand and marketing than a lot of people do. And that's, you know, most likely a product of my background. I was a journalism major and got really into statistics when I was still at university and grew up in the research business. So I think data is near and dear to my heart. And I think the new breed of marketers and brand specialists are also data junkies. And we really have to be.
I think that's so true. And you mentioned studying statistics, and what came in my mind is how I usually talk about my own education in statistics is that I made it out of statistics. I passed statistics. The bar was set solidly on the ground, and I walked over it.
Right. If it makes you feel any better, Nick, I literally could not place into math at university. And so I got put in what was called business math, which was basically like math for dummies. Like, if you can't pass this, you actually can't have a successful life as a human being. And then from there, the instructor actually referred me into a statistics class and thought that I would actually enjoy that. And I loved it. I loved it. It was all made perfect sense to me.
As someone who spends time as a college educator, I do think it's funny the labeling and casual relabeling of courses out there. I uh, for
for a science requirement, I sought out, I think, what was called Earth History and Resources, but had the nickname the nickname of Rocks for Jocks on campus. So it was supposed to be the easy way to pick off the science requirement. But it's interesting. You talk about business math, and I think what you said of marketing, most people think of it as it's the creative thing. And certainly I struggled on the stats side, but I would have to think that that investment in analytics, with what we've seen, with where we've seen marketing go over the past decade especially, that putting things back into financial terms, that investment in analytics and stats is really paying off when it comes to marketing today.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, for me, it was a total game changer in my career. And it's something that I lean really heavily on when I'm looking at growth strategies for companies, because three quarters of what I do is to come in and do an assessment and look at company data and determine either where there are opportunities for growth or many times like why the company isn't growing. And you can find that out if you understand how to analyze financial data. It's super easy to figure out what the path to growth is. But I think a lot of people, and particularly founders and executive teams, they just get so caught up in the day-to-day that they can't see it anymore.
Well, and certainly that is, I mean, you look at the growing jobs in marketing, and it's the tremendous growth around analytics positions. But then you look at, you know, where it intersects with your background is that whole companies cropped up because the job, I mean, marketing analytics in its old form, you know, when we were sort of doing our best to decipher Nielsen ratings and calling that good, there wasn't much more to it than that. But now it's really an area that there's so many data inputs that it's new people that we don't have and that business schools are struggling to train to keep up, and that there's whole companies that are needed to meet this need that weren't there just a few short years ago.
For sure. Yeah. I think this focus on data has led to a revolution on the brand and marketing side of things. It was interesting. Gartner put out a report, I can't remember, I think it was maybe late last year, that said that in 2020, CMOs will spend more on technology than CIOs in companies for the first time. And that, you know, that doesn't really surprise me. It's interesting because I had written a marketing director-led brand and marketing, like kind of head of brand and marketing for a company. I'd written a job description and I'd sent it to the CEO, and the CEO sent it back to me. He's like, I think there's too many acronyms in here that people won't understand. And they were pretty, you know, like they're acronyms, Nick, that for sure you would understand. It was like CAC, you know, ABM, PPC ad buying. And I was like, you know, if they don't understand those acronyms, they're not qualified for the job.
Well, that's
like if they don't understand how to track marketing performance, like they're not the right person.
That's a really interesting subset to think. I mean, I was just talking about it from the skill standpoint, but what you just pointed out, even as marketing has changed and become more analytics driven, there is, I mean, the learning curve is fierce, and you do need to know that. But there's vocab that not everyone might not be on the same page of.
For sure. And what I really look at when I'm looking at folks working in a marketing or brand capacity are people who can present like a CMO, but think like a CFO. And that's the, you know, what, you know, somebody who is analytical enough to think about how am I driving growth for the company? What, you know, what are the financial metrics that I'm trying to meet? How am I working collaboratively with the C-suite? And how am I ultimately driving growth? And it's not just about, oh, how many followers did I get on Instagram or on Facebook or on, like, who cares what the followers are if it's not resulting in conversions in some way. And that's a really tough thing. I get in arguments with people about this all the time, because the truth of the matter is, of course, there are some things that you're going to do from a marketing branding perspective that can't be measured, that are super powerful. But there's, you know, you have to do some trade-off analysis around that.
Well, as you bring up the fun topic of some of the vanity metrics, some of the easily accessible points of data that are easy to kind of sit there like a cat and just kind of fiddle with the cat toy, because it's easy and it's in front of you. But you talk about really the monetary implications from the report, and talking about CMOs spending more than CIOs. What's being missed in this rapid growth around analytics? Are there things that we're getting more wrong than right?
Well, I mean, I do think, you know, there's this phenomenon of analysis paralysis, where you spend so much time looking at the data that you're not being forward thinking enough, and you're not taking risks, and you're not experimenting. And so I think part of it is, you know, you want to look at data to fine tune what you're doing, but you also need to you know, use the other side of your brain to also look at and engage what are there opportunities that maybe are untapped that people haven't thought of before that you want to experiment with. And I think that's kind of an important part of any brand strategy, is where is there room for experimentation and risk, where you can invest a little to see if a particular strategy is going to work. And I don't think that people do enough of that. I think that there's not enough, particularly for mid-market firms, I would say there's very, very little risk taking, that people go with what they're comfortable with. And they also utilize a lot of paid strategies, which I'm not a huge fan of. I mean, I think that if you have the time to devote to more viral and sticky marketing activities, like, that's always where I want to put my time and effort. But for a lot of folks, they kind of just go with the tried and true, you know, they go to expos or conferences, or they pay for PR, which is a personal, I could rant about PR for a solid hour on this podcast. I won't do that. But, you know, I think that people go with what's familiar and what they know is going to work, versus experimenting with new platforms or new ways of doing things.
Do you struggle to keep up with everything that's new with marketing today? Don't get frustrated. Get scrappy. I'd love to bring my Get Scrappy keynote to your next conference or corporate event. With a foot in the classroom and a foot in the field working with clients, I know what works and why, and I can't wait to share it with you during a talk that mixes strategic insights with tactical, practical tips. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So that's an interesting point there that you just brought up in terms of the paid strategies, and looking for things that are viral, things that you can build. And a lot of times, to create something, it can be a tricky mandate to say, create something that's viral, but you want something that's talkable, something that will move online. And a lot of times, that takes that other part of the brain that we were talking about too. I struggle with how to best stereotype the buckets, but the creative one, where you're really swinging for the fences. And I think that a big takeaway that I'm hearing from this conversation is another thing that you just said about both sides of the brain. Of the best marketers needing to make sure that they understand the analytics, that they understand things beyond vanity metrics and what you're getting. But also, you have to be able to move too, and you have to be able to make some of those big, bold decisions. And not everybody's always able to marry that up.
For sure. I think also, like, understanding the psychology behind why people do what they do. And I think for me, like, I don't know how much of Jonah Berger's books that you've read. I'm like a Jonah Berger super fan, and I was really fortunate to meet him at a conference a couple years ago. And so now he very kindly sends me all of his books in advance.
Nice.
So I'm reading his latest book right now, which isn't coming out until March. So I feel super fortunate to have that. But, you know, I think every time I read his books, I'm like, oh my God, yes, of course, because it's all about the psychology behind why people do what they do, and like how to capture attention and how to be more persuasive. And I think that those are all things that you know, when you read through his books, like there's, you know, does he have data behind it? Yeah, of course. But it's not a data driven positioning. It's about taking risk and understanding why people buy in certain ways or why they react with brands in certain ways and being smarter about, you know, the communication strategies that you have around that.
You know, I love that point. My in thinking of how I ended up in statistics, I didn't study marketing. I studied psychology, and I think that
right.
It is one of the best. I always feel like I'm sheepishly admitting that it's not what I studied, but I really think that it's in a lot of ways just as useful, if not more so. And it's for that reason of understanding why people do what they do and to be able to make decisions to help people to take action. You have to know something there. And if Jonah Berger's listening, I think that this your promotional circuit for this next book should include a stop on the On Brand podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and you talk about all of that and leading to growth, and it really makes me think full circle back to our early conversation of the role that the brand that you have, and that plays in acquisitions. And I think a lot of times we think of the financial analysis that goes into that, but what role does, how do you see brand analyzed in on the financial side of that?
It, you know, does your brand help your valuation, your direct valuation from a financial metrics standpoint necessarily? You know, no, I wouldn't say that is part of a valuation model, but I do think having brand equity where, you know, when I'm going out to sell a company and I'm able to disclose the name of the company, I've had buyers say like, I've never even heard of that company before. Like what, you know, versus other companies where people are super enthusiastic because there's a good brand and a good story there. You know, and even if the company isn't the biggest firm, you know, I think having a good brand is really, really powerful. You know, from my perspective, having a solid brand makes everything easier. And I too often see companies really underinvesting in marketing and brand and just trying to muscle through on sales. And it is literally the most painful and expensive way to grow a company, hands down.
Well, and it's hard to navigate that too, because even as you just noted in there, there's not something that you can quantify, and I'm not suggesting we need that. That feels very, very clumsy and ill-assembled to have a brand score that you can quantify. So like you said, it doesn't have a column on the spreadsheet, but at the same time, the interaction that you just described of I'm talking about brand X, and if people perk up, if they understand that, if they've heard of that, that does just as much. So it's strange because it's something that you can't quantify, but has value that you can't ignore.
Yeah, I mean, you can't quantify it, but it impacts all of the other valuation metrics.
Right.
You know, like if you're looking at, for instance, recurring revenue is a big metric that we look at in terms of valuations, like how much, you know, annual recurring revenue do you have? Well, I can tell you your annual recurring revenue is going to be a lot stronger if you have a stronger brand, 100%, because people want to be associated with it and they're more likely to renew. So, you know, I think when, you know, you can look at those variables in isolation, but brand impacts all of those variables.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah, you can, and it would be hard to have, it would seem one without the other. I mean, I'm sure you could have a lot of those performance metrics pretty strong and not have a great brand, but it seems like they go hand in hand, maybe more than they don't.
Yeah. I would say that it's rare that I see companies that have really strong valuation metrics that haven't also invested in brand.
So you talk about investing in brand, and that's a tricky one because it seems like that's that produces some C-suite shudders, it seems, when you talk.
Because nobody wants to spend any money on marketing.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, yeah. I feel like even within the categories, it's like, show me the pay-per-click thing. Show me the ads on Facebook where I know that 1 + 1 = 2. I know I put this in, I get that out, and I have this kind of general result. But when you talk about investing in brand, that feels like it's a big expensive thing that might not change anything. I think is honestly what it sounds like. How can we make that less scary as brand builders?
I think a lot of that comes down to the CEO. I think you rarely see great brand and great marketing from a company where the CEO doesn't really get marketing. So I also think that the CEO is oftentimes the best marketing asset you can have. I mean, look at T-Mobile, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what you think of their CEO, because he's kind of a wild guy, the truth of the matter is, like, he is that brand. And he's out evangelizing it every day, and he's super enthusiastic about it. And to say that he doesn't have a positive impact on that brand, I mean, of course he does. You know, when I was building Decipher, you know, my last firm that my partners and I sold at the end of 2014, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money to spend on brand, but, you know, I was on the road every single week out evangelizing it, speaking at conferences, doing, you know, podcast interviews, like anything that I could do to elevate the voice of the company was what I was doing. And so I think, you know, if you have an internal brand evangelist who is somebody that's willing to go out and talk about their brand, and particularly if that's the CEO or someone in the C-suite, that's a really great way of doing it with very, very little overhead.
That's a really good point. And to your last mention in there specifically, it doesn't always have to be the same person.
Correct.
I think
it's better if it's not the same person, to be honest.
Yeah, because I've encountered CEOs that meet your first criteria of saying it. I think a lot of just everything related to branding comes down to the CEO, because it is a big investment that isn't easy to understand, to quantify. But I've encountered CEOs that get it, but aren't going to be the T-Mobile guy. And why does his name escape me? Which, speaking of branding, I'm just calling
it's
him
the John Lagarde, I think.
There you
something
go.
Something like that.
I think you're correct. But and then sometimes I've seen it where the CEO gets it, but then it's someone else internally that, like you said, is that evangelist leader type.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good for there to be multiple evangelists in a company, because then the brand doesn't become so tightly tied to your personal brand. And that, you know, that was an issue that I ran into when we went and sold Decipher, is that people had so closely aligned my personal brand with the company brand that it was almost challenging for me to exit the company when we sold, because I'd always planned to exit when we sold. I had two other business partners who were going to go on with the company, but the entire brand was associated with my personal brand. And even to this day, I'll have people approach me at conferences and say, like, hey, my licensing agreement is up, and like, hey, can you call somebody at the company and like help me negotiate the terms? And it's like, I can't do that actually. Like, I don't have anything to do with the company anymore. But, you know, I mean, it's a testament to, I think, how powerful, you know, that brand evangelism can be, but you also have to be really careful about how you execute it.
Well, and at the risk of bringing up something even squishier than branding, which is culture, I think that when you uncouple it from it having to be the C-suite, you do something potentially bigger. As you note, you build a culture of evangelism that can be shared by many parties, and ultimately, to your last point, isn't dependent on we have a great leader. And I
For
think
sure.
it's good to have a great leader, and you should have that, but it shouldn't be you build something stronger if that person is able to change, and you haven't jeopardized brand advocacy or brand building either.
For sure. I've always felt, you know, I have to say, and you know, like in all the companies that I've worked, you know, in and with, I think the biggest challenge is actually getting people who aren't in the C-suite to become evangelists for the company. You know, people get very caught up in the day-to-day work and they say they want to do it, but then they don't actually do it. Like, I think it's challenging to even get people to write blog posts, let alone post on social media. You know, like every company that I do work with, I'm like, hey, it'd be great if everybody could reshare the content on their LinkedIn and they can, you know, they're just, I mean, I would say 99% of the time people are super enthusiastic. Like I'll give them a pep talk and tell them like, this is what you need to do and it's going to be awesome. And it'll also help your personal brand. And then it's like when it actually comes time to do it, it's like crickets.
Well, and I feel like that's maybe another way that marketing has changed profoundly beyond where there's new tools and technology, beyond those specific things. I think it's the increased presence of analytics, which we've been talking about most of the show. But I think it's that last point that really marketing is sort of been turned inside out in a way that it really can't be a silo, be a department.
Oh, for sure.
Like that. It has to involve others. And that is tricky to your point of even getting a blog post out of someone, much less getting people to out there on the front lines building the brand along with you.
For sure. I mean, from my perspective and how I've always had it function in my companies is that sales, marketing, and business intelligence are all one unit. There's no separation between the two. And I think that's where I think you see a lot of problems with brand development too, is that there are all these silos within companies where the sales team isn't bought into the brand or the marketing strategy. You have marketing that's operating in isolation, and then you have business intelligence that's not actually looking at marketing data, but are looking at all these other data sources. Well, so, you know, the more I think that those three functions can really sit together and work as one cohesive unit, the better it is for the company and brand health overall.
Well, and those three especially are, at the end of the day, they may phrase it differently, but they're all working with the same objective in mind. And it's really your focus and a focus of a lot of what we've talked about here, which is growth.
Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of everything that we've talked about, as we begin to wrap up, Kristen, it is time to ask me for a brand that has made you smile recently.
A brand that has made me smile recently is drops.com. I don't know if you've seen their ad, but they do laundry pods. It's like a sustainable laundry detergent.
Oh.
And their CEO taped the funniest ad spot that I've ever seen. You have to look it up. It's called The Naked Truth About Laundry. And he is literally naked in the entire ad.
Well,
and he's like got really flat affect, which makes it even funnier. Like he's clearly not an actor. And I saw it on Instagram and I have to tell you, like I forwarded it to like everybody that I knew. I was like, this is an amazing, amazing ad. Yeah.
Well, it's making me smile just hearing about it. And I think you picked a very, very on brand smile. Sometimes it's just something random, but that harkens back to your earlier point about beyond paying for all of this, what can you do that creates something talkable? And that, I'd say a naked ad about laundry is...
yeah, a naked ad about laundry. That's all. You know, it was funny because I saw the ad come up on Instagram and I was literally kind of scrolling through it. And then I saw him naked in the bathtub and I was like, what the heck is this? Then I ended up watching, you know, it's like, it's very rare that I would watch a full ad on Instagram. And it was hilarious. Yeah, I was I thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
What does it take to stop you from scrolling?
Right. Exactly. Apparently, and a half naked man in the bathtub. That's really all it takes.
Kristen, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. Our website is scalehouse.consulting. You can also look me up on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active. And we've got a fantastic blog that we run on growth strategy. So if you go to our website, you can subscribe to that. It comes out once a month and it's just kind of like a summary of like all the interesting things that we're thinking about on growth, particularly as it relates to sales and marketing strategy. So yeah, if you want all of our best tips and tricks, it's a good blog to sign up for.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that, including The Naked Truth About Laundry. at...
Yes, drops.
At our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Kristen, thanks for being on brand with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you like this conversation and would like to hear more, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you'd like to listen. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.